That kind of thing. And that ritual exists here, so this is, I guess, home. But, yeah, sometimes where you live is just a place, no matter how long you live there. Right, Nilanjana agreed, a bit surprised no one at the bar had shouted interloper at her yet. I feel like Indiana is more my home than Nightvale, even after a few years. Here are your drinks, the bartender said, having hovered over them listening intently to what they were saying for most of the conversation. Bartenders are good listeners, which is part of the appeal of bars, and also why the government started paying bartenders to report the content of these private conversations. Daryl's Manhattan came with an ice cube engraved with his social security number. The presentation for Nilanjana's mojito was far less flashy, although she thought it was a nice touch when the bartender sprinkled some mulch on the bar top around them. They both took sips of their drinks. Interesting, she said. What fascinating flavors, he said. That would be the splash of Pine Sol, said the bartender. Let me know if you need anything else. He slipped into the back room to radio what he had heard to his government handlers. It tastes like a little sweet and a little bit like fruit, right? Nilanjana said once he was gone. Right, just kind of like fruit, Daryl said. They sipped their disappointing drinks again and then left them alone. That's why I was so stubborn about time when you came by the store a couple years ago, he said. I just think, if time is weird, then my parents' death isn't irreversible. Nothing is. We could go backward on anything. And that's not the case. Time moves on whether we want it to or not. I get that, but time being weird doesn't mean anything is possible, only that more things are. Like better drinks? She laughed. Thanks again for showing me around the church. It was more enjoyable than I thought it would be. You're a good tour guide. Oh yeah, no worries. It's nice to have someone show an interest in that, you know? Most people act like we have some kind of disease they might catch, or like we're going to hold you at gunpoint and make you recite our sacred scriptures. And we only do that once a year, on Gun Day, so. I don't get religion if I'm honest. You sound like you're honest. I mean for my own life. It doesn't make sense for me, but watching you talk about it, you get so excited and it's easy to understand why you believe it, even if I can't. He frowned. He had been pushing the church thing too hard. You don't have to join the congregation, Nilanjana. I'm not trying to convince you to. I'm sorry, I'm bad at this. What I'm trying to say is, your positivity is attractive. You're attractive. You looked attractive just now when you were smiling and talking, is what I'm saying. Oh, I. Thanks, he stammered. Then it occurred to him how to respond. You are also attractive. His tone made it sound like false flattery. But she was starting to understand that he was sincere even when he didn't sound it. She grinned, not at his compliment, but at his sudden awkwardness. It put them on an equal plane. Listen, she said, and she pulled out a pin pad. This was a bold and sexy move. Oh, wow, he said. Yeah, okay. He pulled a stack of forms out of his bag. I don't want you to think I was expecting anything, but I thought I'd bring these in case. Sex in Nightvale, like most things in Nightvale, is heavily regulated. But that doesn't mean that people can't have fun with it. There is something intensely flirty and erotic about the process of filling out forms in triplicate, providing a medical history, and entering one's individual sex pin to verify one's identity and interest in the forthcoming activity. It took them a while to get all of the paperwork done, and there wasn't much chance to talk, what with having to work through these sometimes complicated and often contradictory questions on the forms. When they were done, and the bartender, who moonlighted as a notary public, had stamped everything, they took a moment and looked at each other. So, yeah, he said. I'm sorry, this wasn't too soon? I don't know how it works with your beliefs. No, it's okay. For some people, worship of the smiling God is all about some imagined purity, but that's never what it's been about for me. Shall we? Go to the doctor and have the blood tests done? Let's get it over with. A couple hours later, having received all the necessary results, they were back at Nilanjana's apartment. She hadn't cleaned it before going on the date, as part of a half-baked plan to not invite him home when she really wanted to. The plan hadn't gone well, and now she could only apologetically kick aside laundry and research papers. Being a neat person, she was annoyed at herself about the mess she had left. All he noticed about her apartment was her. "This is a nice place. I like the, he said, and she kissed him before he could say anything else. Sex, in Night Vale, has a lot more steps leading up to it than it does in many other places. But once it actually happens, it works like it does anywhere else. In this case, it worked wonderfully. There was a moment, right in the middle, when she saw his face close to hers, sweaty, a few stray hairs from his sideburns sticking out, and she thought, how strange we are. How strange this is. But how nice. How good. But how strange. Their bodies formed a crescent on the bed, her bed, which was pushed up against the wall in her bedroom, which was just off the living room slash kitchen combination of an apartment on the second floor of the Homely Prospector apartment complex. The complex was not within the crime-ridden science district, but near it, because Nilanjana didn't want to have to walk home too far at night. From her window, if either of them had been looking, they could have seen the blinking light of the broadcast tower off in the desert. From the tower, theoretically, a person could see her window, but it would just be a light among many lights, easily lost in a universe that was full of light, and a lot of other things, too. 14. The light on the tower still blinked the next morning, but it seemed feeble against the blue-white brightness of the sky. It did not have the strange divinity that it had in the darkness, blinking out from distance and from nothing. Instead, just metal struts and beams, and the dirt service road leading to the highway, leading in turn to the center of Night Vale. And near the center of Night Vale, the Moonlight All-Night Diner, a 24-hour place for food and drink, and a reminder that other people are alive and exist, even in the most quiet and lonely hours of the night. Framed by the window, among the morning crowd were a couple of people scanning the room for an open table. Not a couple by any definition except quantity, a pair with no specific affiliation except the pleasurable memory they both shared of the night before.
"Take any table you want,"
said Laura, bustling by with two cups of coffee on a tray, the cups no more a couple than the people she was speaking to. Long branches sprouted from Laura, although in this season, they had no leaves. For a few weeks in November, she would shed leaves all over the dining room, apologizing and raking them up when she had the time.
"By the window, do you think?" Daryl said, right when Nilanjana said, "Just at the bar?"
And then they both agreed with each other, and then switched back again, and, after some confusion, settled on a booth by the window. As they started for it, Jackie Fierro, owner of the local pawn shop, came in.
"Hey, Nilanjana," she said. "Hey."
"Daryl," he said.
"Hey, Daryl. So breakfast, you two."
The only thing subtle about Jackie was that she didn't give a giant wink and elbow nudge.
"Yes,"
Nilanjana said, answering the implication.
"Cool, man, cool."
Jackie generally seemed to find it cool.
"I've been going on some dates myself. Never went on dates before, you know."
"Oh, we're not," said Daryl.
"Or whatever it is, relax, it's breakfast time. I find breakfast highly relaxing. Anyway, now that I'm 25, I feel like dating is maybe long past due."
"You're 25 already?" said Nilanjana. Jackie had been 19 for a long time, decades maybe,
and had recently started to age again. Time doesn't work in Night Vale, Nilanjana thought, resisting opening that argument with Daryl again.
Right, yeah, I skipped a few years. Felt like I had some catching up to do, and I was ready to be 25.
Daryl had no response to this contradiction to his belief that time isn't weird. He was used to a world that contradicted his beliefs and was comfortable operating on faith.
That's brave of you, Nilanjana said. I mean, you can't go back, so jumping forward like that.
Can I not go back?
Jackie frowned for a moment and then shrugged.
Who wants to go back? It's like my mom says, you can't change the past without creating a cascading series of unintended consequences. She says that every morning and cries.
Wise woman, your mom, said Nilanjana.
Right? I've been dating a particular someone. They have a job high up in city government, so we're keeping it pretty quiet. You know how it is with any small-town government official. Their life is a complex network of secrets and lies. But they're really nice. Once you get past what people think about them and anyone else that works in government.
That's so wonderful, Daryl said.
Well, we'll leave you to breakfast. He liked Jackie, but he was hungry enough that he liked food more in that moment.
Sure thing, she said.
She held up her left hand for a high five, and he was starting to do his rotating fist thing, but adjusted to meet her hand. She held it up for Nilanjana.
You too, dude.
Nilanjana gave it a solid slap.
All right, well, talk to you all later.
Jackie took a seat at the counter, and Nilanjana and Daryl sat themselves in a booth.
I hope it's okay I said that we're not dating, Daryl said. I don't want to make it like I'm definitely not interested. I mean, we did go on a date, right?
Oh, yeah, Nilanjana said. But way too early to put labels on things, or I guess, like in my day-to-day job, I love putting labels on things, labeling bottles, labeling beakers. My favorite thing to do is organizing and labeling. But when it comes to this, labeling is different. I mean, she knew they weren't dating, and she was fine with that. In her own head, she agreed fully with Daryl's not-dating stance. They'd had drinks at a nice bar and later slept together. That's not dating. But his saying it aloud drew attention to it. It was like being overweight. Nilanjana was fine carrying extra weight and did not feel uncomfortable about her body for that. But when others drew attention to it, she felt like she should be different, and she was made uncomfortable. Hypothesis. There was no need to put a label on what she and Daryl were doing. Evidence? She felt fine. She placed her hand on his to show how fine she was, but also to touch his hand again. He lightly squeezed her hand. His palm was warm and dry. His eyes were on hers, not needy or searching, just glad. Any reprise of physical longing was put on pause with a sweep of Laura's long, bare branches. Nilanjana had to duck to avoid getting conked.
What can I get you?
Laura asked.
Omelette, Daryl said decisively.
Nilanjana hadn't even looked at the menu yet.
Do you have some sort of smoothie or something? She said.
We have waffles, said Laura.
That's not much like a smoothie, though, Nilanjana said.
No, I suppose not, said Laura.
She waited expectantly, her pen over a pad.
I'll have the waffles then, I guess, Nilanjana said.
Great.
Laura carefully worked her branches between the eating customers back toward the kitchen. The momentum of their conversation disrupted, Daryl and Nilanjana sat across from each other in friendly silence. He nodded. She tapped a rhythm with her knuckles on the tabletop. Across the room, Laura filled Jackie's coffee cup and winked at her.
I've been hearing some whispers about you and a certain Sam, Laura said. Don't believe everything that ruffles your leaves, said Jackie, winking back.
But Laura looked devastated.
Jackie, that's so offensive at this time of year?
She gestured to her bare branches.
Shit, I'm sorry, man. I wasn't thinking that was my bad. Yeah, me and Sam have been seeing how things are. Sorry again.
Laura shrugged curtly and whisked her branches expertly past the stacked dishes behind the counter without bumping a single one. If I can ask, Daryl said, just as Nilanjana was saying, I don't think I even like waffles. And then they both said, oh, sorry, you go. And then both stopped. No, really, please ask whatever question it was, she said, laughing a bit at their conversational stumble. I was just putting out words to fill up the space. Okay, these last couple of days have been nice. Last night was especially nice. She smiled out of reflex. Maybe she did want to date someone. He had kind eyes, said kind things, touched her in kind ways. But I was curious, he continued. If you definitely aren't interested in joining the congregation, which is fine, can you tell me more about what brought you by the church that day? I would like to be of help, if I can. She considered Daryl, the way his face looked in the morning light through the window, the way he threw one arm up on the back of the booth next to him, the way he crossed his legs. He seemed like a man at ease, a man not hiding any other version of himself. Simply a man who was the man he was in the moment he was in it. But what did she know about him, really? He belonged to an organization that she believed might be involved in terrible things, and was, a possibility she hadn't eliminated yet, trying to keep Carlos from properly studying the nature of the other desert world, and the strange house that served as a gateway to it. And here he was in the jittery afterglow of their first night together, bringing up her visit to the church. Daryl was likable, but there is a difference between likable and good. In many ways, Nilanjana felt like one of the most important parts of growing up and of approaching the world as an adult was understanding the difference between likable and good, and recognizing that one often had no effect on the other. She had no way of knowing what he wanted from her, and so the question here was how much of her life did she want to live with the comfort of trust, and how much did she want to live with the painful necessity of suspicion? This balance, she felt, was the rest of what it meant to be a grown-up, and she decided that the kind of adult she wanted to be was one that lived openly as much as possible, even if that occasionally meant being open to pain. It's hard to explain, she said. Reasons for coming to church often are. Right, sure, I'm sure, but not like that. See, it started with a laser. He laughed. Okay, you got me. That is the first time a reason for interest in our religion started that way. Well, not a laser, I guess, but more a house. Wait. Let me start over. And she told him most everything that had led to this point. The house that doesn't exist, but looks like it exists. The desert otherworld, an empty place that could be reached through the house. Carlos trying to study this otherworld and how an unknown force or group or groups was trying to prevent him. How something was destroying Nightvale, great pits opening up in the earth, swallowing buildings, people, entire lives whole. How that something was maybe the same thing that was trying to stop Carlos from discovering more about the desert otherworld. The whole situation's a blur from our vantage, she said. We're too close. We can see colors, maybe the outline of a shape. But we need to find a way to get farther out, trying to see this thing as a whole. That's the only way we'll understand what's going on. Huh, Daryl said. But what does the joyous congregation have to do with all of this? His tone was confusion, but also suspicion. Just what are you accusing us of, was the question under the question. Waffle, said Laura, dropping the plate in front of Nilanjana. Both Daryl and Nilanjana had been so absorbed in the moment that they hadn't heard her coming, and Daryl grunted in surprise, and then smiled to hide his embarrassment about the grunt. And omelet. Grateful for the distraction, Nilanjana dug into her waffle, which had been cooked to a perfect medium rare. Daryl watched her eat. He had been hungry before, but now he wasn't touching his omelet. He wanted to hear what she had to say. She reconsidered her thoughts on dating and was now glad they were not. This was why dating and friendships were so difficult. People want to confront you about differences of opinion, question you about what you're doing, be always present in your life. She liked the measurability of numbers and nature. No, I don't think your church is doing anything in particular, she said, around a mouthful of food, wishing now that she hadn't started eating. Well, your description of heaven sounds a lot like the desert otherworld, which is interesting, and then your pamphlet.
What about it?
It said it was written by someone named Wordsmith. His face was unreadable.
And why was that interesting?
He asked in a careful and flat voice. Well, she said. Oh, what the hell. She had already told him this much. Maybe he would be willing to help her. City Council said that the wordsmith had told them about the other world, had warned them about what was out there. It seems like whatever conspiracy is trying to keep us from understanding the desert otherworld, the wordsmith is at the heart of it. Maybe even collaborating with the city to stop Carlos's research. Who knows? And then, in the pamphlet, wordsmith. So, this person has something to do with your church, and that's why I was there.
Daryl nodded, and finally took a bite of his food. She watched him chew, waiting for some kind of response.
So, what do you think? Do you know who the wordsmith is and what they're planning? Could you help me find them?
Daryl laughed, quickly and without humor. Yes, I can help you find him.
He held out his hand, like a prospective employee meeting his interviewer.
It's nice to meet you. I'm the wordsmith.
15. You little shit, was a phrase she could have said. Slap was an action she could have done to his face. Stands up, leaves without saying a word, was a stage direction she could have performed. Oh, was the actual sound she made.
I'm not so good at verbal communication, Daryl said. Maybe you've noticed. So, when I need to get a message across, I write a note. I got really good at writing because of that. Friends in college started calling me the wordsmith, and it stuck.
It sounded like bragging. He was unaware of that.
Do you have a nickname you wish people had called you? Like, in middle school, I tried to get my friends to call me D-Day, because my name starts with D, and that sounded tough. Plus, I'm a big history buff, and of course, D-Day is short for Dog Day, which happened during World War II, when we defeated the Germans by not letting them come over to pet our dogs anymore.
I don't know if you have a way with words, but you certainly have a lot of words, Nilanjana thought as she dabbed her face with a napkin and placed it on the table. Are you mad at me? Daryl lowered his voice.
Of course not. I'm just thinking about a lot of work I need to get done today.
No? No, I'm not mad at you, she said, not exactly meaning it.
Okay, he said, not exactly believing her.
The church asks you to write stuff for them, because you're so good at it.
I write pamphlets and flyers and stuff. Did you see the illustrations that Jamila made? She's great at those. Has to do them one-handed because she never puts down the drill.
Did you ever talk to the city council? Nilanjana worried about asking, about making so clear the direction of her investigation, but her instincts as a scientist drove her forward.
Yeah, that was a cool day. I decided to try to convert the city council. Everyone else told me not to, that the council is dangerous, but I wanted to try anyway. I mean, I was afraid I was going to die the whole time, but it felt important. A chance to have our say in front of beings who mattered. I gave them a pamphlet and talked them through it. They got excited when they learned about the smiling God, thanked me for informing them of this matter. I half expected them at services the next week, but it never happened. At least maybe they won't be so quick to crack down on the congregation. I felt good about that.
What exactly did you tell them about the smiling God and the house that doesn't exist?
How would I tell them about the house when you just now told me about it? And I gave them the basic story of the smiling God. What is this about, anyway? Why are you so upset?
There was silence. It was awkward. It was less awkward than his talking, so it was fine. The city council had said the wordsmith had warned them. Either he had lied to her, or the city council had found information in his pamphlet that he hadn't realized was in there. Now she needed to make him think that she didn't suspect him anymore.
I didn't realize you were the wordsmith. And so now I know that my investigation into that was a dead end, she explained carefully. It just made me realize how misguided I was to keep pursuing anything with the Joyous Congregation. You were so nice to show me around and welcome me in. Your friends and church were lovely. Then you brought me a sandwich, and we went out last night and had a lot of...
Daryl coughed.
Fun, I was going to say.
He laughed. Milanjana did not laugh at first. And then she laughed, but it was too late. A poor acting choice. Stands up, leaves without saying a word. Would have been a better acting choice, she thought.
I'm not trying to recruit you or anything, he said. It's not like that. I just like you, Nilanjana.
I'm not worried about your church, Daryl, and I'm not worried about you.
Lies.
You're not a dangerous person.
Not a lie necessarily, but certainly not her current working hypothesis.
Daryl did not react.
A delightful person, in fact, she said.
He smiled his usual wide, forced smile. He did not intend for it to come off as forced, but it did.
You're delightful, too.
I'm going to be late to work. They split the bill, and she drove him back to his car. Nilanjana wished it had been in awkward silence, but he told a long story about how Stephanie was such a good volleyball player that they started a church volleyball team. One time, during a game, she spiked a ball so hard that it broke the crystal pyramid at the top of the oaken tower. No one knew what the purpose of the pyramid on every volleyball court was, and no one had ever seen one get broken before. Everyone was cursed for days after. It was terrible. A few people lost pets. Someone else was falsely imprisoned by the secret police. Daryl's car was broken into. Once the pyramid's curse had been lifted, they all had a good laugh about it as they buried all their volleyballs and nets and made Stephanie promise to never play the game again.
She's so awesome, Daryl said.
Sounds like, said Nilanjana. His adoration of Stephanie didn't bother Nilanjana, and so she ignored the fact that it did. She did as many scientists do against the precepts of their own profession. She was selective about which facts she allowed into her data set. They were next to his vehicle.
Let's do this again, he said.
Sure, she said. She didn't mean it, she adamantly told herself. Daryl watched as she left. He texted Jamila about what had happened, and she texted back the cry-laughing emoji, followed by the orange tree on fire emoji, followed by the child walking through the contemporary sculpture wing of the art museum emoji.
Wonderful, you're back, Carlos called out as Nilanjana carried her field notes into his office and laid them out in neat rows on his table. It's all been quiet here, but I've been afraid to start any experiments until I heard from you.
Some developments on our search for who Wordsmith is and what they are planning, she said. I had sex with him.
Huh,
said Carlos. He didn't seem upset, but then he preferred to express himself through words or actions rather than emotive gestures.
I thought he was someone else. I thought he was a nice guy with, I don't know, a body, I guess. Someone to have a drink with. And it's not clear to me that he is definitely part of any conspiracy. He claims he only went to convert the city council. That is, if you believe him.
She slumped into a chair and sighed into her palms.
This isn't going well, she said.
Based on last night, it sounds like it's going great.
You're cute, he frowned.
Of course I am. I'm a scientist. All scientists are cute.
Even his frown was cute.
No, you're being cute.
Carlos took off his glasses and rubbed his eyes. He looked tired, but also perfect. His perfection was only emphasized by the small human details of exhaustion and stress.
Let me tell you a story, Nils. When I first came here, I was frightened of this town. I was confused by it. Time didn't work. The city council were creatures I had never seen before. There were angels, actual angels, wandering around, and they were all named Erica. But the strangest part of it was that everyone here treated it as a normal. No one was a bit surprised at the form that city council took, or that UFOs are a regular part of the night sky. I would listen to Cecil on the radio, calmly describing the day's events, and I would try to call him to get him to understand that everything was all wrong, that time didn't work here. But it wasn't that he didn't see the things that I saw. He just interpreted them differently. I was afraid of him, and all the people of Nightvale because of that. But as I spent more time talking to him, explaining science to him, I realized that even though I didn't understand his worldview, I liked talking to him. And even though he didn't understand my worldview, he liked talking to me. And we liked being with each other, and that like turned to love. Sometimes still, he'll calmly report on something on the radio that I know is impossible by all current scientific knowledge. But that same day, he'll squint up from bed with a pillow-wrinkled face as I bring him coffee, and he smiles like it's the first time he's ever seen me, and he says, "How did I end up this lucky?" I see my younger self in you, and I'm glad you're helping me with my research. You and I are both outsiders. We always will be, but it gets less as we accept more of the town's strangeness. And I know that's hard. It was hard for me, too. Still sometimes is. Everyone in this town is frightening, and friendly, and kind, and awful. But everyone everywhere is. As he talked, Nilanjana glanced down at her findings next to Carlos's findings, and something caught her eye. She scanned the data as Carlos continued with his lecture. "People are complicated. This wordsmith of yours, maybe he is working with the city, maybe he isn't. But he isn't necessarily bad. Of course, he could also be bad. You can only trust someone based on what you experience with them. People are complex. You can't reduce them to charts and equations. I've tried. I've tried so hard, but it's not possible yet." She finished looking through the combined data and pounded her fist on the table. "Okay, I'm sorry," he said. "You're upset. I'll drop it." "There's something big happening, Carlos." "Nilanjana, I'm sorry if I offended you. Sometimes I can't tell." "No, in the desert. Look." She pointed at the chart, then at the graph below it. "We've been assuming that agents from City Hall have been causing these events, but look at this." The first few events had happened several days apart, each one minor but larger than the last. They were scattered all over the map. Then the next few happened a day or two apart, increasing in magnitude, but still with no pattern to their placement. The most recent events were even larger, more frequent, dotting all over town and culminating in the vanishings of Larry Leroy and Big Rico. "Most result in the disappearance of material and people," she said, "and leave behind those pits. And they correspond with every time you try to study the house or any other aspect of the other world. This supports the idea that it is the city council trying to stop your work." "Pamela nearly said as much," Carlos agreed. "But there are also these." She indicated smaller events with a different set of data. Short, localized tremors, sketching a series of triangles in the desert outside of Nightvale, out toward the mountains, if you believe in that sort of thing. "This movement doesn't correspond with your experiments at all. I've gone out to look at these pits, and there's nothing anywhere near them. It looks like the random movement of an animal." Carlos traced the triangles with his finger. "I've seen something like this before," he said, "but I can't remember where." "Let's say it's possible that a living thing is causing this. Then what kind of creature moves like this?" she said. "The incidents don't connect linearly. How does it appear, destroy, and then appear somewhere completely different?" "Perhaps it is moving underground, and we only see it when it pops up from below?" She thought about that.
and she thought about a stained glass image of a gigantic creature emerging from an old oak door. An old oak door that leads to heaven, which is a desert. Or, she said, when it pops up from another world. 16. If there was anything moving out in the desert, the helicopters would see it, and she knew of one helicopter that had shown a particular interest in her. So Nilanjana went back out to the desert, to a quiet place in the scrublands, and waited. She didn't have to wait for long. "How's it going up there?" she called to the helicopter when it arrived. No response. "I'm just hanging out here looking at this cactus. Kinda boring," Nilanjana said. "Thought some conversation would be nice." The helicopter hovered noisily and wordlessly. Whap, whap, whap. "Do you mind if I use a pen and paper to take some notes? I know writing utensils are illegal, but, like, everyone uses them, right?"
"Writing utensils are banned from Night Vale city limits, citizen."
The helicopter loudspeakers boomed.
"Okay."
Nilanjana took out her phone and typed her notes into the screen.
"How's this?"
No response. She decided to try a more direct approach. She held up the graphs and charts from Carlos's notebook.
"I'm looking for something big out here in the desert. Have you seen anything? Anything like the movement these charts are showing?"
Whap, whap, whap.
"Ah, sorry," Nilanjana muttered, putting the papers down. "There's no way you can see tiny charts from that far up."
"I can see the charts perfectly. My vision is excellent," the loudspeaker said. "And don't be so hard on yourself."
"Oh, thanks."
She held the charts back up.
"That data indicates wild seismic stuff all over town. Fascinating," the loudspeaker said. "Are you taking into account air pressure and humidity levels? Also, are you checking those with the city earthquake schedule?"
"Yes and yes."
"And those movements out in the desert? Those are interesting. They suggest something moving underground, maybe?"
"What makes you say that?" Nilanjana asked.
"I'm a big fan of Stephen R. Covey's 7 Habitats of Highly Effective Beings. Number 2 is beneath the Earth's surface. It used to be the lizard people lived down there, but they all returned to space decades ago."
"And these events are too random to be the work of the lizard people,"
Nilanjana pointed out. "So you're up there, it seems, all the time. Have you seen any of these events actually happen?" Whap of the blades. The loudspeaker crackled.
"Can you hear me?" she said.
"Duh."
"Well?"
"Data recorded by secret police is classified."
The loudspeaker volume had increased quite a lot.
"Wait, not classified? It doesn't exist. Forget I said classified. I'm just a flying helicopter here." "No, wait, I'm not. You don't see this helicopter. Leave the area."
Nilanjana sighed and put her stuff back into her car. The secret police recorded everything in town. Conversations, people walking to work, financial activity, people sleeping, people playing with their cats and dogs. It wasn't uncommon to see secret police standing outside a person's window taping cats playing with catnip-stuffed toys. They love that garbage. She knew that the helicopter had to have taken video of this area, showing some kind of moving thing, or at least a visual on how the pits had formed. She stood at the open door of her car for a few seconds, trying to figure out what to say that would change the pilot's mind. But what did she know about how the helicopters thought? After all, this wasn't her town. She hadn't grown up with them.
"That guy that was out here with me last week? Daryl," she tried. "He works with the Joyous Congregation of the Smiling God. He's nice. I think he's nice. But I also think the church is maybe doing awful stuff. We had a date last night. Like, it went well. But I didn't realize how far up in the church he was until this morning, and it made me feel awful. I think something terrible is happening, something related to the church, or maybe it's the city council.
In which case, I don't expect you'll tell me. Larry Leroy is dead, so is everyone at Big Rico's. There are these pits out in the desert and rumbling under the earth, and I don't want to become part of a police investigation or get arrested. But I think that if I could see some kind of footage, that would help.
Whap, whap, whap.
Why am I talking to you? You're probably recording all of this and are going to report me. I'm going to have to go down to the secret police station and turn this data over. You know what? Let's just pretend I didn't say anything. Are we cool? Can I go? No response. Damn it, damn it, damn it, she said. She stared at the ground and realized that maybe the helicopter was giving her a silent opportunity to leave. Go! Get out of there! Her mind shouted at her. She jumped into the driver's seat, said, Glad we're all cool! See ya! And slammed the door. She started the engine and turned the car toward the main road.
Halt! Nilanjana Sikdar! Halt your vehicle!
Her engine cut out, stopped remotely by the helicopter. Most car problems in Nightvale turn out to be caused by the sabotage of government or city agents. Auto mechanics regularly end up arrested for tampering with government operations. As the engine stopped, her stomach fell. So did her head. Her forehead bumped in frustration against the steering wheel. She got out of the car and raised her hands.
Put your hands down, the loudspeaker said.
She did. There was a pause. She didn't know what to do with her hands now that they were down.
Last week, my boyfriend left me, the helicopter said. You fly around in that helicopter all the time, he told me. And I said, not all the time. Don't use superlatives, Nate. You're always using superlatives. But he wanted to go to Aaliyah Seance Night at Dark Owl Records. Aaliyah does occasional concerts via a medium at the record store, and they're nearly impossible to get tickets to, because the owner of that place doesn't want anything to get too popular. So she only makes 3 tickets available to the public.
Aaliyah was so great.
Still is. Anyway, I couldn't go because I was out here doing this, and I love hovering in place and staring at all the sand, but Nate's right. I do this all the time, and it's hard to find someone who is nice and understanding, and brings you falafel on your lunch break. How was the Moonlight's falafel, by the way? I've been meaning to try that.
Fine. A bit dry, but the paraffin wax chips and butterscotch marmalade were tasty.
Good, good. Daryl's a nice guy. I looked up some stuff on him. And the church is weird. No doubt. But I don't know. I'm not telling you you have to be in a relationship, but finding a person to have cocktails with... Oh, how was the mulch mojito at Tourniquet? My bartender friend Arun told me that you ordered that drink.
Not good. Daryl's Manhattan was better, but the texture was too crunchy.
Too bad.
Listen, no offense, but I think I'd rather be arrested than have a helicopter cop explain the importance of dating to me. Is this what you do now, seminars? I'm sorry to hear Nate left you. That's very sad. I'm sure you're nice, too. Like Daryl, but also like Daryl, you work for a pretty terrifying organization. I don't think the city has my best interests in mind here. I just want to find out what we're up against. That's all I want. A minute of silent hovering, in which Nilanjana was too scared to move. And then a huffing sound from the loudspeaker. It sounded like sniffling. Are you crying? She said.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to make you feel bad.
No, I'm being an asshole to you. It's just, this is my job, and I love my job, and you're nice. I like it when you're in the desert. I don't feel so alone.
Me too. I like it when you're here.
And your needs and my job, they kind of conflict, I guess, and...
More huffing until they recovered their words.
I miss Nate. I miss him. I can't sleep. I miss him.
Come here, come here. The helicopter lowered to the ground. The wind whipped sand into Nilanjana's shirt and hair, and she had to turn her head and squint. She walked sideways toward the cockpit. The windows were heavily tinted, and she couldn't see anything through them.
I'm going to give you a hug, okay?
Nilanjana offered.
I'm not allowed to exit the craft. It's a secret police vehicle, and there are secret police things in here. Plus, I'm shy.
The loudspeaker was painfully loud from this short a distance. Nilanjana stepped up on one of the skids and drew her arms wide, placing her palms flat against the sides of the door.
Shh,
she said, as she gently patted the door. Sobs roared out of the loudspeaker. Her ears would be ringing the rest of the day.
It's so stupid!
It's not, shh, Nilanjana said, rubbing her hand back and forth along the helicopter. A minute or so passed.
I should go. Thank you. I didn't realize how much I needed that.
Nilanjana's ears burned, not just from the volume, but also from being pressed against the hot metal door. She let the helicopter go and retreated to a safe distance.
You're welcome. I hope to see you again soon.
You too!
The helicopter began its ascent.
Hey, are you going to report this? I just need to know so I'm not worrying about it for the rest of my life.
You're good. Also, check your phone.
Check my phone?
The government has more, but they'll never let you see. This was all I could send without being noticed. Goodbye, Nilanjana Sikdar.
The helicopter returned to its spot 150 feet in the air.
Thanks. Bye.
She waved. No response. Nilanjana returned to her car. It had been an unproductive day, but at least it hadn't been counterproductive. She grabbed her phone, no emails or messages. She opened up her files and found one that hadn't been there before, labeled, "Sorry, the mulch mojito wasn't good." She clicked the file and gasped as she realized what she was looking at. 17. The desert from a helicopter's point of view. Mountains separating blue sky and beige sand. For several seconds, nothing but that. Then something moving in the sand. Possibly an error in video replay. But it looked like bumps of earth rising and then falling, one after the other, in a line. And then some huge shape coming out of the sand, arcing through the air and disappearing back into the sand. Then again. The resolution wasn't good, so the only thing certain about it was the movement. She watched the video again and again, but the more she watched it, the less certain she became about what she was seeing. It was proof that there was something there, but didn't give her any information about what it was. The pilot had mentioned that this was all he could save from the city, which meant the city had more. She would need to get it from the Hall of Public Records downtown, one of the most secure and private locations in Nightvale. The archivists who ran the Hall of Public Records did not like lots of things. They didn't like journalists. They didn't like ancestry research. They didn't like questions. They despised Capricorns. Loathed them. They certainly didn't like scientists. They kept the archives behind thick vault doors and used an elaborate security system. Nilanjana had been thrown out of the Hall of Public Records once for trying to get a copy of her car registration. She had lost the original. Back in Indiana, something like that wouldn't be a problem, and it hadn't occurred to her that this would be different in her new town. She filled out Form 11-AURF and paid the $35 fee. The clerk stamped the form and the back of her check, then stapled them together, placed them into a manila file folder, took out a cigarette lighter, and burned the whole thing. They tossed the flaming paperwork into a metal trash can and then stomped it out with their boot. Nilanjana filled out the form again and wrote another check, got back in line, hoping for a different clerk. She got a different clerk, but when she handed the money and form to them, they gnawed the paper to shreds with their teeth. She asked what she could do to ensure that they would accept her form and payment, but this had been the wrong approach. The clerk pressed a button below their countertop, and an alarm rang out. An LED screen above her began flashing the word, treason. The others in line, who had previously been pointing at her and shouting interloper, changed from that friendly greeting into a malevolent scream of, "Fifth columnist! Fifth columnist!" She didn't even know what fifth columnist meant. She looked it up later, but the definition in the dictionary had been redacted. Then she went to the public library to look it up, and was nearly bitten in half by a librarian that had broken loose from its shackles. The learning process of moving to a new area can be exhausting, and even the most basic errands can feel like a struggle. Now she knew she couldn't just walk up to the Hall of Public Records registrar's desk and ask for files on strange subterranean activities in the desert. So instead, she walked up to the registrar's desk and asked where the restroom was, hoping to then sneak off and find the records. The clerk glared at her for a long moment. So did the line of people she cut in front of to ask her question. Several of them grumbled, "Interloper." Several others nodded and agreed, "Interloper." The clerk looked the part of an archetypical government employee. Elderly, at least 7 feet tall, uneven shoulders, and wearing a visor, plastic vampire teeth, and orange peels for earrings. The clerk wore a name tag that said, "City of Nightvale Hall of Public Records," and then underneath was an etching of a spike-tipped cudgel. Nilanjana tried again. "I'm sorry to interrupt. Is that a mace or a club? I'm not sure I know how to pronounce your name." The clerk hissed. Nilanjana hissed back. The clerk nodded and pointed toward an unmarked wooden door in the corner of the waiting area.
"Knock 4 times, wait 90 seconds, and then scratch down the center of it," the clerk said.
"Thank you." Hiss.
"Interloper," said Charlie Bear, behind her in line. He was there to apply for a haunting license, which would allow him to be a ghost after he died. The city only issued a few a year because ghosts were cool, and everyone wanted to be a ghost. Nilanjana knocked on the door, then waited and scratched, as the clerk had said. A panel in the door slid open. It was dark behind the panel. When nothing happened, she said, "Hello?" Nothing continued to happen.
"Hello?"
She leaned into the hole but couldn't see anything.
"It's unlocked. Just open it,"
the clerk shouted from across the room.
"Interloper,"
Charlie said again, but distractedly. He was worried he wouldn't get his license and would have to cease to exist after he died, which seemed boring to him. Nilanjana turned the doorknob. It opened easily. She stepped into what felt like a hallway, but it was too dark to see. The door slipped from her fingers as she moved forward, and it slammed shut behind her. She was in absolute blackness, except for a single box of light on the floor from the panel in the door. The darkness felt heavy, and she imagined that there was someone just next to her. And then that imagination became a certainty. There was someone just next to her in the dark hallway. Frantically, she tried to open the door, but there was no knob or handle on the inside. Whatever was in the hallway with her was reaching for her. She knew that it was about to touch her with hands that would be cold and dry. A face appeared on the other side of the panel. 2 white eyes in the shadow of a backlit head. Nothing touched her. Nilanjana stifled a scream.
"You scared me."
"Everything should scare you," the face said. "Everything and everybody is scary."
It was not the voice of the clerk. She had no idea who this was.
"The bathroom is down this hall," the voice said. "Hang a left, then another left, then pass 2 hallways, then another left, then take the stairs up 2 flights, turn right, go down 1 flight, and it will be 4 doors down on your right."
"Is there a light switch in this hallway?"
The panel slammed shut. It was completely dark. Any second now, a cold, dry hand. She wasn't alone in here. She wasn't alone in here.
"Stop it," she told herself. "This wasn't rational.
This was just fear. She needed to look at the data and make a hypothesis. Hypothesis. The hallway was empty when I entered it, so it's still empty now. The feeling of not being alone is just my body's response to the dark. She hoped that the data would continue to support this hypothesis. She felt along the walls looking for a light switch, or even a door. Feeling in the dark, she found a bend to the left in the path. After more cautious blind walking, she found another bend to the left. She came to another apparent turn, but upon feeling the area out, she realized it was a four-way intersection. She decided to go right, against the voice's directions. After all, she wasn't actually looking for a bathroom, and with the way things were going, she wouldn't want to use any bathroom they had anyway. She rummaged in her bag and found her cell phone. She activated the flashlight app on it and used its weak light to examine her surroundings. There was door after door, down the hallway as far as the beam of light went. Many of them were unhelpful, with markings that said things like, Room 16-UX-9, Supplies, which was confusingly right next to Room 2783, Commissary, or Room 12.4Z, This Door Leads Nowhere, which was completely accurate. The door opened onto a wall. She backtracked a couple of times looking for any kind of room with a label like Ecology Studies or Land Management or even Top Secret Shit in the Desert. She laughed. That'd be convenient, she thought. Failing to find anything spelled out, she tried the next door she came to. Room MMMM-459-P, Public Piano Registry, just to see what was inside. The door opened into a room that was as dark as the hallway. Her flashlight wavered over a high-ceiling space covered wall-to-wall with shelves full of document boxes. Then, her beam found the face of a woman, and Nilanjana yelped. The woman yelped back. She was sitting at a desk in the middle of the completely dark room. By her were stacks of boxes. Every single one of the boxes, except for the one nearest the door, was labeled Piano Declined. The one by the door said Piano Declination Pending.
Interloper!
The woman shouted. Hi, sorry, wrong room! Nilanjana backed out of the doorway and turned her light down the hall. She saw what looked like a figure at the end of the hall. Who's there? She said. She took a few more steps forward, and the figure became clear. It was the woman from the desk.
You aren't supposed to be here, interloper,
the woman said.
You are trespassing,
the same woman shouted, but from the other direction. Nilanjana turned her light. The woman was still at the desk. Her skin was like rice paper, with pulsing blue veins underneath. She looked like a cave fish.
I don't like trespassers, the woman said from the hallway.
When Nilanjana turned the light back to her, the woman was much closer.
Do you know what I do with trespassers?
The woman said from the desk. Now she was standing.
I eat them,
the woman said from the hallway. She was inches away. Her breath was hot against Nilanjana's face. It smelled like old cooking oil. In the upturned light from the phone, her face was a moonscape of shadows.
Yes, I eat them,
the same woman said from the doorway, her breath hot against Nilanjana's ear.
I'm just looking for some records, Nilanjana managed.
I ate the records, the woman said with both of her bodies and both of her voices slightly out of time with each other.
Nilanjana had no scientific model to understand what was happening at this moment, and so she listened to her instinct to run. As she stumbled backward, she swung the light between the two versions of the woman, catching the stop-motion movement of the woman's body's jerking in strange postures toward her.
I, the woman said.
There was only one of her now. She was a few feet away.
Eight?
inches away.
Them.
A cold, dry hand around Nilanjana's neck.
That's enough, Claire.
The voice was loud, amplified through a PA system. Fluorescent lights snapped on up and down the hall.